Thanks for inviting me into your home. Long haul truck, RV, camper, taxi. Your parents' well-appointed rec room, with the simulated wood paneling, electric fireplace, and the painting of dogs playing poker. Your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM, the best in late-night talk radio. I'm Richard Serrett, and tonight, this morning, we're coming to you live from Coast's Toronto affiliate News Talk 1010. Had a great time last night on Coast, speaking with Preston Dennett about schoolyard UFO encounters, and Jeff Abraham and Bert Kearns about performers who died on stage, which one would think would be a rather morbid topic, but one that was handled with great sensitivity by the two authors. In fact, at turns, it was quite uplifting, an homage to performers who died with their boots on, so to speak, like comedian Dick Shawn and British comedian magician Tommy Cooper. Hope you enjoyed it as well. Now, I'm still waiting to hear from someone out there, anyone out there, regarding a piece of bumper music I played last night. Sweet Country by the great Bobby Gentry. I'm hoping someone can tell me why this wonderful artist suddenly up and quit the music business in the early 80s. Whatever happened to Bobby Gentry? You can send me a tweet at Richard Serrett, or an email, richardserrett1@gmail.com. Serrett, S-Y, because I love you, R-E-T-T. Thoughts and prayers to listeners in the Canadian Maritimes tonight, affected by the remnants of Hurricane Dorian, almost 400,000 homes there without power, school canceled in Nova Scotia tomorrow due to cleanup efforts. Meanwhile, of course, the death toll in the Bahamas, which was decimated by Dorian, expected to rise dramatically. Officially, the death toll stands at 43. However, hundreds of people are suspected of being buried under rubble. So, on a happier note, this weekend was kind of the last hurrah for the summer for my boys. Starting tomorrow, they hit the books in earnest. So the mighty Aphrodite took North and Zach to Canada's Wonderland. It's a huge amusement park with rides and games. And I was at home, and she was updating me by sending me pictures and videos as the afternoon unfolded. So first comes a video of the boys on the Great Canadian Mind Buster. It's a roller coaster, essentially. Then a video of the boys playing whack-a-mole. Remember that one? And my one son, North, won a big purple stuffed animal, a sloth. I thought, oh boy, like we need another stuffy. Their rooms are literally just filled chock-a-block with stuffed animals. And then comes a video of the boys tossing softballs into milk cans. Do you remember this game on the Midway? It's impossible, right? Nobody ever wins. I relaxed thinking nobody wins that game. Unfortunately, North understands a little bit about physics and employed some backspin and swish on his second toss, and you get 15 balls. On his second toss, the softball landed neatly in the milk can. Now, he didn't win just any prize. He won the prize, the most coveted stuffy in all of Christendom. It's an immense stuffed red dragon. This thing is monstrous. It's like as big as a Buick. It must stand, 4.5 feet tall. It has a wingspan of several feet, a long tail. And Wonderland apparently only gave away three for the entire day. And there it sits in our living room, taking up half the room. And of course, North named it, which is never a good sign, and ordered me to give it a hug on my way out. I told the dragon, don't get too comfortable. I mean, how much could I get for that thing on Craigslist, I wonder? It's either that, I either sell it or put an addition on. It needs its own room. Anyway, I've tweeted a couple of images at Richard Serrett if you want to check out this monstrosity. And if you have any advice, I'd appreciate it. Michael H. Brown is an award-winning author and veteran print journalist who has compiled one of the most remarkable collections of strange phenomena I've ever come across. Brown argues we're living in a time of unprecedented supernatural phenomena, like the boy in the Philippines back in the 50s who disappeared into thin air in front of dozens of witnesses time and time again, all corroborated. The story of Uri Geller's time travel. And that these strange occurrences, Brown argues, might just be a sign of spiritual warfare or spiritual invasion of some kind. Demonic deception, perhaps? What the Bible refers to as lying wonders, which incidentally is the name of the book, Lying Wonders, Strangest Things. And Michael will be along shortly, and for the first 2 hours, to share some of these remarkable stories, which also include amazing coincidences that are, they're going to leave you scratching your head. In the second half, past life regression therapist, hypnotherapist Dr. Elena Gobor returns to the program with some more cases of people healed through hypnosis, healed by undergoing a past life regression. And we'll also engage in a discussion on what Dr. Gobor refers to as the science of the soul. What happens when we die? What happens during the time in between incarnations, or the life between lives? All of which, admittedly, it's fascinating, but quite frankly, a bit of a challenge for me. I have a particular bias, which I think I've mentioned from time to time where appropriate. I'm a Bible-believing Christian, and reincarnation doesn't square with my belief, but that's totally fine. And actually, it's my understanding you don't even have to believe in reincarnation for past life regression therapy to work. So there you go. And for the record, I'm not looking to get into a theological discussion with anyone when I open up the lines for Dr. Gobor for questions and comments. However, I'm open to doing a show sometime in the future, maybe a debate on whether reincarnation was once part of Christian teachings and then was surreptitiously removed from the biblical text, as some of you have suggested. But that's for another time. Strangest Things: Healing with Hypnosis and Past Life Regression. That's all on tap for Sunday night into Monday morning here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler, hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. I'm Richard Serrett. This is Coast to Coast AM. Why don't you stay a while? Michael H. Brown is a journalist and the author of 29 books, known initially for his groundbreaking reportage on the Love Canal toxic crisis. He's penned books on everything from the mafia to the search for the first anatomically modern human woman using DNA, the search for Eve. Since 1991, he's written books pertaining to the supernatural, paranormal, and prophecy, including best-selling The Final Hour, The Other Side, and Witness. In his days as a journalist, Mike his work appeared in magazines such as the New York Times Magazine, the Atlantic Monthly, Reader's Digest, Discover, Science Digest, and New York. And he appeared on such shows as Today, Nightline, Phil Donahue, Joan Rivers, Sally Jesse Raphael, and of course, Coast to Coast AM. And we've reached him in Florida where he lives with his wife, Lisa, and three children. Michael, welcome back to Coast AM. How are you?
Richard, great to be with you.
I'm looking forward to this.
I am also.
This is an amazing collection, as I mentioned earlier. Let me ask you, first of all, I think by my count, there's about 63 stories in Lying Wonders, Strangest Things. I mean, how difficult was it to winnow it down to 63?
Well, you know, it was difficult, Richard, because there were about 25 chapters that were all written in final form that ended up on a cutting floor, because I just wanted it to move quickly. I wanted the very most gripping facts. And there's so many phenomenal things, as you know, occur all around the world in different regards, in different realms. And it's tough to pick the most interesting, but boy, when you do, they just jump out at you. So what we're trying to do is make it quick-paced, and each chapter kind of three pages of intensity.
And as a journalist, how important was it to you or for you to try and corroborate these stories, that they actually happened, as best as you could?
Well, you know, you do make phone calls and, of course, a lot of reading and so forth. In some cases, it's well near impossible. But, you know, to be absolutely sure of anything when it comes to the paranormal, when it comes to the supernatural, because sometimes you're dealing with a single witness, but I'm pretty confident in what I put down in paper. I don't use things that I think are a little eccentric or even exaggerated.
And you were, as a working journalist, as I mentioned, covering, important stories, the Love Canal toxic crisis, which went on for years and years. I remember, watching that unfold on TV, even as a kid. And then all of a sudden in 1991, you sort of, you turned towards the supernatural. What caused that?
Well, I was writing that book you mentioned on the mafia. I was living in Manhattan in New York City, and And during that book, I wasn't an active churchgoer or anything, but during that book, I had some paranormal occurrences, and I linked them to what I was writing about and the gangsters I had to interview, and even in one case, I had to live for, oh, 6-7 weeks at a hideout of somebody in a witness program who had been arrested in a very sensational murder in New Jersey, and he had put away 74 gangsters and 3 mafia families. And just strange things started happening to me, and I said, gee, I mean, I kind of believe in the devil, but I don't have to worry about him. He's busy with Linda Blair. I knew nothing about about this realm, and I don't know. I became convinced that that some fleas jumped off of the dog, so to speak, and found myself in spiritual turmoil. But anyway, I started then to really pursue this. Richard, since I was a kid, I was interested in phenomena. Back in teen years, in the mid-1960s, I was collecting all kinds of information on UFOs, and I used to read and reread a book by the radio broadcaster Frank Edwards called Stranger Than Science. That's why I call this book Strangest Things. It's kind of an update on a bestseller he had, covering a wide gamut of various oddities occurring around the world. So after 60 years, it's kind of an update of Frank Edwards, who I read in childhood, and some of the paranormal and supernatural occurrences that I myself experienced through the years.
Well, before we dive into some of these amazing stories, just if you could quickly share one of these paranormal supernatural occurrences that happened to you while you were investigating this mafia story.
Well, I was, for instance, the first thing that really jarred me is that I was not married at the time, and I was in the cafes all the time in the Upper East Side of New York, where I lived, and I did at restaurants every night. And I didn't go out one night, and I had this very bizarre dream vision or whatever, in which there were these 3 entities around me, that, as if they had their hands over me, and as if they were trying to heal me, and I couldn't look straight on at them. They were like kind of figures of stick energy, if you will. And I woke up. I said, what was that? I smoked a couple cigarettes and went back to bed. The dream continued right where it left off. Woke up again, this time in stark terror, because I had been shown this very frightening image appeared on the door of my apartment, 12A at 200 East 90th Street. And I remember going over and looking out the window and watching the last of the stragglers coming out of the East Side cafes, among whom I usually was. And finally, you know, there was no one to call. My two best friends worked for the New York Times, which meant they were atheists. And kind of a joke there, but
it's a given, pretty much.
Kind of a joke, but at any rate, a little accuracy there too. But I went back to sleep, and it continued as a 3-parter. And make a long story short, it was I felt that they were supernatural entities, angels, if you will, that were warning me that the devil was at my door, that that there was evil involved, and I started to take a second look at Christianity.
The term Lying Wonders, which is the title of the book, Lying Wonders, Strangest Thing, that comes from the Bible. What does it mean?
Well, Thessalonians, you know, in the I don't know if you'd say end times, but in very critical times, at the end of an era, I believe we're approaching the end of a major age, a major era. That there would be a lot of spiritual warfare, that there would be a lot of various creatures, if you will, sent our way. In the Book of Wisdom, and even Richard, it even mentions this specifically, that there would be strange beasts or creatures created in response to the sinfulness of the time. I mean, you can actually, you know, you can find that in the Book of Wisdom. And so I look at all these things, whether it's abominable snowmen or skunk ape mothman, champy, whether it's relic dinosaurs in deep Africa, or UFOs, whatever it is, and there's a commonality. There is, I've noticed that for many years. There's a commonality between various phenomena that you don't, you think of being disparate at first, but they're not. You know, they show up in many of the same places. You'll have the same type of phenomena. You'll have a UFO or a Bigfoot or, you know, a lake monster at a place like, out in Devil's Sea or Route 66 area in western New Mexico. You'll have these things going on at various places. Clinton Road in New Jersey, the Navajo Reservation in New Mexico, not at Roswell itself, but in the same state. At Mount Rainier in the state of Washington, where the first, in 1947, the first famous UFO reports came from Kenneth Arnold. Below on the mountain, Bigfoot reports. You know, there's even a kind of a Bermuda Triangle in Massachusetts. In Rendlesham, which is one of the more famous UFO sites in the UK near NATO bases, really U.S. bases, back in Christmas time, 1980, was a famous report of UFOs. More than 20 officers, officials, security men, and so forth, and including the military commander, saw this light and then this disc. But, Richard, the question is, why also is Rendlesham known for a creature called the Shug historically? Why are there apparitions of what they call the Lady in White? Why are there other strange creatures roaming that territory, poltergeist activity? You find the same thing at a forest land in Transylvania, of all places. And so, again, I think that we're dealing with a deception, as it says in the Book of Wisdom, for not without means was your almighty hand that had fashioned the universe from formless matter to send upon them a drove of bears or fierce lions or new created, wrathful, unknown beast. And this is what I mean by lying wonders.
Mm. You're right. These places, it's like one-stop supernatural shopping. You get many of these strange occurrences all sort of bundled together in one location. Michael H. Brown, my guest, the author of Lying Wonders, Strangest Things. We're approaching the bottom of the hour, but I just wanted to sort of dip our toe into some of these stories, and then we'll continue after. But let's start with, it's the very first one out of the chute, and that is this strange case of a disappearing boy in the Philippines. I think it goes back to the 1950s. And, I mean, there is some corroboration for this, but let's just start to, I'll get you to start to tell the story, and then we'll continue after the break as well.
You're right. It was 1952 in Manila, and here you had this young Filipino lad, Cornelio Closa Jr., and he was a mild-mannered, nice kid, good student, and one day he's walking back from school with a classmate, and he said that he saw this beautiful young lady across the field, and his friend didn't see her. He ran over to talk with her, and they said that his friend said his eyes were bulging out of their sockets, and she's in this white dress beckoning him. The friend looked several times, couldn't see a single thing, but afterward, Cornelio's personality took a dramatic turn. This mild-mannered, good student became angry and hostile, belligerent. He got in fights, including with even bigger students, bigger kids, fighting with his parents, pushing away food at dinner. And his father said he snarled, like an animal. And it became worse and worse and worse. At school, same thing. And phenomena started to occur around him, like you have in cases of exorcism and poltergeist activity. And they called in one minister who was holding him and, I guess, praying over him. And the boy disappeared in front of him and in front of his parents. And then repeatedly did this to the point where his father nailed the windows shut and barricaded doors, and the boy would still disappear for hours. And I think on occasion, a couple days. Then this occurred in front of an entire classroom and the teacher, who had a nervous breakdown. So this was a case that, as you said, was witnessed. It's not just one or two people in the case of Cornelio, but doctors and those who were trying to attend to this quiet boy who had been turned into a monster, basically.
Remarkable. Michael, I'll get you to just hold on right there. We'll take a quick time out and continue with Lying Wonder. We're talking about strangest things, and speaking of which, some extreme microbes have been found thriving deep inside Kidd Mine in Canada in a water reservoir said to be undisturbed for 2 billion years. Geologists from the University of Toronto recently discovered the single-celled sulfur-breathing organisms, which need neither oxygen or sunlight. Instead, they nourish themselves on chemicals in the surrounding rocks or pyrite. Pyrite, or fool's gold, and the new finding adds to the growing list of similar microbes found in such places as volcanic vents on the ocean surface. In fact, one geobiology report from a Swiss team estimates that the 500,000 trillion trillion cells live inside the deep earth with a weight of more than 300 times all living people. You can check out that story up in the carousel section at coasttocoastam.com, where our webmaster tonight, Lex Lonehood, has posted that and other tantalizing tidbits. Back with more of my conversation with author, journalist Michael H. Brown on Lying Wonders, Strangest Things, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you live from Coast Toronto affiliate in-depth radio News Talk 1010. Very quickly, Ken in Toronto writes, in regards to Bobby Gentry, she married Jim Stafford in the late 1970s, so perhaps her leaving the music business was tied to her fear of spiders and snakes. All right, thank you for that. We are with Michael H. Brown, the author of Lying Wonders, Strangest Things. And just before the break, Michael, we were talking about this strange case of Cornelio Closa Jr. in the Philippines, this young boy who vanished time and again into thin air back in the 1950s. Is he still with us? I mean, did you make any attempt to contact him or any of the witnesses?
No, there's no tracking him down anymore. You know, he would be quite up there in age if it's still alive. But no, it wasn't no signs of him still being around. I know that right after this was taken care of, he went into kind of seclusion, didn't want to, you know, talk about it. This happens to people like this. And so it was really a preacher named Sumrall who presents us with many of these details. You know, a case of exorcism where such extreme phenomena occurs, and Sumrall really was detailed with his report. He was an evangelist from America there in Manila, and he said that the phenomena went on, this invisibility went on for a year. He said that, you know, he'd be playing with the other kids on the floor, and all of a sudden he just disappeared, and the other kids would be coughing and retching because of the stench he'd leave behind. And like I said, he might be gone for a while, for a couple days, and then he'd be back in his bed. But this Sumrall ended up being the one who, to use the expression, delivered him. And this beautiful girl that he kept seeing and kept going off with, it was when he would go off with the apparition that he would kind of be cloaked with invisibility. But that beautiful girl turned into an angry, ugly being and disappeared. And that was the end of the case. And he went on to live anonymously, as did another amazing case in the Philippines.
You tell the story of Uri Geller, one that I had not heard before, you know, this amazing mentalist and psychic from Israel, who you met on a previous occasion. Tell me about that meeting, because some strange things happened there before we get into the story in the book.
Yeah, it's, you know, Uri Geller, a lot of people, especially this one magician, claimed that he's a total fraud. And, you know, I don't know if Uri Geller is a showman. I mean, he hung out with Michael Jackson and so forth. I don't know if he reverted to tricks on occasion, because he was always called to be on stage, Johnny Carson show, here, there, and other places. But I, Richard, am sure that some of his phenomena was authentic. For instance, I remember in the 1970s, I was a newspaper reporter traveling to Kent State University Smith Hall of Physics to interview a physicist there named Dr. Wilbur Franklin, who had studied a ring, a platinum wedding band that had split apart in the presence of Uri Geller. It was being held by another physicist from Stanford Research Institute, and Geller had simply put his hand over the physicist's hand, and when the physicist opened his hand, his wedding band was split and was parted, I guess you would say. Well, Franklin took this back to his laboratory, put it on under an electron microscope, and he found two effects that he said could not be duplicated in the best laboratory on Earth, and I think it still holds true. And that is, Richard, that on the same fracture surface, on the one hand, you had the molecules and atoms showing incipient melting. They were melting. The metal was melting. And immediately juxtaposed, right next to it, adjacent to it, the atoms were showing signs of having been frozen at absolute zero. You can't do that, even with tremendous laser equipment. And so I want to see a magician do that.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it, Amazing Randy.
I want to see a magician do that and a number of other things that Geller could do. Geller did something for me that can't be explained by magicians. But I don't know if he does at times cheat. I have no idea. I've never seen evidence of that. I didn't really study him as some people have. But my encounter with him was pretty strange and pretty convincing.
Well, something happened when you were in his presence at his apartment.
Well, yeah. Again, he lived on the Upper East Side of New York, and I went to interview him. I was at the time a Cub reporter. He was gracious enough to let me interview him. Before the interview, Richard, I had been talking to Melbourne Christopher, who at the time was the president of the American Association of Magicians and whatever the formal name of the group was. And more importantly, more to the point, he was known as the foremost expert at occult magic, that is, legerdemain that imitates psychics and so forth, mind reading and all of the clairvoyance and all of that type thing. So I said to him, Mr. Christopher, is there one? I'm going to see Uri Geller, who Christopher said, well, he's a total fake. He's a magician. He was friends with the Amazing Randy. Christopher was. He says, I'm going to tell you. Well, I said, well, what can I do that makes sure he doesn't commit trickery? And he said, there's one thing that he cannot do, absolutely can't do, because no magician can. And I said, what's that? Well, he said, Geller's going to ask you to draw an image. And he's going to be reading the top of your pen as you're doing it. And then he's going to say, give me the paper. And he's going to pretend he's visualizing it, and he's going to draw what he could tell you drew from reading the top of your pen. And he said, here's something that he can't do. Tell Geller, say, if you can receive something, then maybe you can send something, you send it to me. So when I went to see Geller, he did exactly what Christopher said. He said, you want to see something? And he says, do you want to send thoughts, drawing? And I said, yes, but I repeated, Christopher, you send it to me. And he didn't hesitate. He said, okay. So he shuts his eyes, and he draws something. I can't read the top of his pencil. I'm not a magician. And then he gave it to me, and then he folded it up, gave it to me. I put it under my leg. I shut my eyes, and Richard, immediately I saw in my mind's eye a Christmas tree with three ridges. It looked like it was drawn in lightning. It looked like it was luminous. And I remember that on the right side, the trunk was parted from the first ridge of the tree. So I drew that, and then I reached under my leg for what Uri Geller had drawn, and they were absolutely identical. They weren't just highly similar. They were identical right down to that part between a ridge and a trunk.
My word.
So, you know, if anyone was the trickster, it's me. If anyone was cheating, it was me. And I can tell you right now, I can't do that.
Well, maybe you're the psychic.
Well, he certainly was a pretty good sender because it was lightning.
Oh, my. Now, but something else happened at the apartment.
Yeah. Later on in the interview, there was a loud crash in his in a corner of his living room across from us. I was staring at him when this occurred. We were just talking about some of the of his life and so forth. He jumps up, and you could see that this beautiful antique wood chessboard across the room had fallen. Something had smashed into it. And he said, he said, you see, these things happen all the time. No one believes me. I don't understand it. I don't know what's going on. And we went across, and there was like this porous rock. It looked like a small meteorite or something. Had crashed into this, it had to be very expensive, chessboard. And now, first of all, you know, you think, is he going to ruin a beautiful chessboard to impress a local yokel reporter? At the time, I was upstate New York, you know. And but at any rate, I said to him, Hurry, you know, not to be rude, I'd like to search her apartment. I want to see if somebody was hiding in it and had thrown that at the chessboard. I didn't see how they could have done it with that force. And so he said, yes, go ahead. He wasn't insulted at all, and I did. I searched it was a one-bedroom apartment. I searched the entire thing, every closet, every part of it, and there was no one else there. And he certainly could not have thrown that object and caused the effect he did across the room. It came from above the chessboard. So, you know, a lot of people, many, many, many people around Uri Geller claimed teleportation, that objects would materialize and dematerialize, and I think I was witness to it.
And as strange and remarkable as that is, the story that you write in the book about his alleged time travel, I mean, it tops that.
Well, you know, that happened back in the early days when they were investigating Geller. And again, as I said, he was living in Manhattan. And at the time he was being studied by he was very close to a medical doctor in Ossining, New York, Dr. Andrea Poharich, who was famous in the realm of the paranormal, especially in the 1970s. Geller was living at East 57th Street, and he was over visiting some friends in a neighborhood. Then he decided he was going to go out. He was going to buy, I think, binoculars or something like that at a camera shop, which he did. He went out and got those. I think he was walking in the area of Bloomingdale's in Manhattan. And he said all of a sudden he felt like he was lifted up, and next thing he knew, he was smashing through kind of this screened porch area at Poharich's house in Ossining. Now, you know, Poharich came out, heard all the noise. Geller's laying there all of a sudden, dazed, not knowing what happened. He just went through this screen there, 34 miles from Midtown Manhattan. And by car, that's going to take you a good hour if you don't hit traffic. Even a helicopter isn't going to take you there on time, because they could document the time he left his friend's apartment and the time that this occurred. And the time period was, you know, he had taken care of the binoculars in short order. And matter of fact, they called his friends in Manhattan immediately to document this this occurrence. And you know, you hear historically, D.D. Holmes was a famous medium in England. These types of things happened to him, and other people. So again, this is something I'd like to see the amazing Randy do.
Right. And the other question would be, you know, what do your scientific materialist colleagues in print journalism do with a story like that?
Well, not what I do. They run in the other direction. Now they're much more open to it today. The internet and shows like Coast to Coast. I was honored to be with Art Bell last time I was on his show, a long time ago, 20 years ago, 1997. It's in his collection there. But at any rate, they back then, until shows like this broke it, things open and the internet, you didn't get these kind of accounts in newspapers or on the three networks that dominated at the time. They just, you know, as secularist and materialist and so forth, humanistic type attitude, they did not want to know anything about spiritual forces. But I'll tell you, Richard, in doing that research, even as a young reporter in 1975, 1976, I wrote it. My first book was called PK, A Report on Psychokinesis. That's why I was interviewing Geller. I was amazed by how much information there was out there and how many incredibly inexplicable situations, and yet no one was giving it due justice. You could go into all the details you want, and you could interview, as I did, some major scientists and find very compelling information. But like I said, the media did not want to hear about it.
Michael H. Brown is with us, the author of Lying Wonders, Strangest Things. Have you had a chance to talk to Geller since then? I mean, I wonder, does he share, for example, your view that what we're talking about here are spiritual forces?
No, I haven't. You know, Uri Geller went off. I think he was living in, last I saw him, in London or somewhere in England. Although I also had read somewhere that he was going back to Israel. But no, I haven't been in touch with him. I went on to different books, like I mentioned, a mafia book and a Love Canal and so forth. So, I wrote on a variety of topics. But he is still out. And once in a while, I'll see a news clip that he's doing something out there, paranormal. And so he's active in some way. I believe he also was very close to John Lennon. You know, John Lennon claimed to have an encounter with a UFO, and Lennon claimed, for our consideration anyway, that he was given a strange object, and he gave this object in turn to Geller. But
I'd heard that story. Yeah, it was kind of like something like shaped like an egg. Maybe we can pick up on that story on the other side, Michael. We're heading into the break here. At the top of the hour, we'll also talk about the cursed car of James Dean and a story which I'd heard, but again, you provide details which I was never aware of. And that's, again, one of the most remarkable things about Lying Wonders, Strangest Things. Michael H. Brown, my guest. And we'll open up the phone lines as well and take questions and comments.